And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show on Thursday, the 2nd of October. It's approaching 4 minutes past nine. It's great to have you on board. We've got a cracking show lined up for you, of course, keeping you across all the big news stories of the day locally, nationally and beyond. We'll also have some special features for you, as we do every day, and your comments, and we invite them into us right now on 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000. If you prefer to call, it's 07491 25000, and we like your emails too, comments at highlandradio.com. Let's look at the front of the papers out this morning. We'll start with the Tyrconnell Tribune. Remalton, 6.8 million public realm driving business out of town. The reimagination of the public realm in Remalton has been plunged into doubt with confirmation that much of the town's most important business interests and access roads will see traffic excluded and footfalls expected to collapse. The contract has been awarded to ACS Civils Dromore in Tyrone, and the paper's been told that they are about to move into town to begin the project. It's expected it will take 15 months to complete the reimagining works. There's been a chronic parking crisis for 50 years, and the council has never allocated one red cent to resolve the crisis. Their original proposal in 2022 totally ignored the town's urgent demand for a public car park. That remains the position. The council has obviously avoided providing proper access for vehicles in a large part of the town. So John McAteer writes. Much more on the front of and inside the Tyrconnell Tribune on that story and more. Let's have a look at the Donegal news this morning. St. Noonan's Cathedral in Letterkenny reopened yesterday after a major revamp and restoration project, and a new beginning for the iconic landmark will be rung in by wedding bells this weekend. Brona Marley and Dermot McGlynn will tie the knot in St. Noonan's Cathedral this Saturday. The happy couple will be the first to get married in the newly renovated cathedral. A special day to begin with, but extra special, I suppose, as it's historic, isn't it? First wedding after major renovations. The Derry News this morning, a man injured on Bloody Sunday has told a trial how he pretended to be dead while lying on the pavement after he was shot. John Mahan also said that he saw a soldier fire shots at another victim who was on the ground before saying, "I've got another one." Members of the parachute regiment shot dead 13 civilians in Derry after a civil rights march in January 1972. An army veteran identified only as Soldier F has been charged with the murders of two men killed on Bloody Sunday, namely James Ray and William McKinney. On to the Nationals now, and I'm not saying the presidential debate is not catching fire, but even the controversies are, like, you know, a bit boring, aren't they? Jim Gavin's had to take down two pictures to do with the army, and a drone was used where a drone shouldn't be. I mean, we're not really on the cusp of major controversy here, are we? As I say, even the controversies aren't terribly exciting. But anyway, Fianna Fáil president candidate Jim Gavin was forced to remove a campaign video showing uniformed army personnel clapping as he participated in a road run after an intervention by the Irish Defence Forces. The military issued a statement last night to assert that it has non-party political after both the video of uniformed members clapping as well as a photo of Mr Gavin with his arm around its chief of staff were removed from social media. Heather Humphreys, the Fine Gael presidential candidate, she has said that more groundwork should have been done in informing the public along the terms of the family and care referendum held last year. In March of last year, voters overwhelmingly rejected changes to the constitution in two referendums. She led out that campaign. And the story from Catherine Connolly, well, she spent much of yesterday at Leinster House highlighting the plight of residential institutional victims who are now entering the 12th day of a hunger strike outside its gates. Sadly, I wasn't aware that that hunger strike was even taking place, to be honest with you. But I do now, and I'll look further into that. Now, obviously, we all have an eye on a budget, the budget and what it might have in store. But the Irish Times reports that no changes to personal tax bans and credits are planned for next week's budget, meaning the effective reduction in income tax worth over €1,000 to many workers in recent budgets will not be repeated this year. Not indexing income tax bans and credits will mean workers who receive pay increases will end up paying more in tax than they would if the government increased the threshold and credits as it did in recent budgets. So in other words, in recent budgets, if you got a pay rise, there were widening of bands, which meant that you probably kept much of that pay rise. The way it is now, if you were lucky enough to get a pay rise, you won't necessarily see the benefits of that in full because you would be drawn into tax bans, so to speak. The Irish Daily Mail, a convicted transgender sex offender who walked out of jail today after serving a sentence for making threats to torture, rape and murder her mother, said he's unrepentant about the crimes. Now, this person was interviewed sitting on a footpath and said some really quite shocking things. They went on to say, "I don't regret any of my actions. I don't have any remorse." This is Barbie Kardashian after being released from Limerick Prison. Asked if they were sorry about making threats against their mother, they said, "Absolutely not." Born a male named Gabrielle Alexander Gentle, they changed their name by deed poll and has a certificate from the Department of Social Protection that recognise her as female. Kardashian has plans to undergo sex change surgery to remove male genitals and be left with female-like genitals, if you could call it that. And Barbie Kardashian, of course, was in a female prison, which was quite controversial at the time. That being said, some of the comments they made in relation to people and their safety after the fact would be really quite concerning. But Barbie is free to, such is the law in Ireland, you know, go into women's changing rooms, women's toilets, or men's toilets for that matter, even though they've seemingly yesterday made threats against certain people. But anyway, the Irish Farmers Journal, Mart managers are bracing for the impact of a planned boycott of weaning sales by live exporters next week. Exporters say they are increasingly concerned about the health status of the weanlings they are purchasing and want farmers to ramp up vaccination and dosing of their animals. Roscommon-based live exporter Derek Maxwell told the Irish Farmers Journal, "We have no choice but to take this action next week." He said the risk of animal falling ill at export yards or en route to continental markets is huge for not only us, but also for our customers. Worrying statistics as it relates to older people, published in the Irish Daily Star this morning. Record numbers of older people are seeking support from Alone, its annual report revealed yesterday. The number of people accessing services rose to almost 44,000 last year, with health, housing and financial worries among the primary reasons. The report was launched yesterday by Minister of State Kieran O'Donnell to coincide with International Older Persons Day. He said the UN estimates that by 2050, 2.1 billion of us will be over 60. We need a serious and rational approach to what that means for housing, healthcare and the way we live. I'm proud Alone is helping to lead the conversation in Ireland and will continue to do so in the years ahead. 44,000 older people seeking support from Alone last year. That is massive, because obviously they must feel there's deficits, you know, in their life, their current sort of network, that they must seek support elsewhere. The Irish Sun, sunbeds should be banned to cut rates of skin cancers, doctors say. And in fairness, they've been saying this for quite some time. They seem unanimous, though, in the dangers of using sunbeds, and that they claim the underregulated industry is aggressively marketing a harmful product to vulnerable people. Experts have warned for years that tanning salons pose an unnecessary tumour risk. Doctors say figures show 43% of Gen Z aged 18 to 25 use UV beds, and many do not understand the risks. Sunbeds emit intense UV radiation, which browns skin but also damages DNA. Centre Research UK says they are not safer than sunbathing, and warn there is no such thing as safe tanning because we've got a high rate of skin cancer. Is it not the most common cancer in Ireland? Apparently, though, another generation of sunbed users, 43% of Gen Zs, those aged 18 to 25, use sunbeds or UV beds. That's massive. I wouldn't have thought it was anywhere near that, but even one apparent exposure on a sunbed can heighten your risk. Now, I'm not a doctor. I think maybe you probably would need to be somewhat disposed to getting it in the first instance, but as I say, I'm not sure about that. And of course, as you've been hearing, wind warnings have been issued for Ireland for today and tomorrow as Storm Amy blows in. Met Eireann announced a status orange rain warning for Kerry, which started at 6 a.m. today and will last until 8 p.m. tonight, bringing heavy showers, which could potentially lead to flooding. A status yellow rain warning has also been issued for Munster and Connacht and counties Cavan, Donegal and Longford. Now, we're going to get a particular touch with this storm, and I imagine that we might see a change from the yellow weather warning Friday into Saturday. We'll keep you up to date with that, of course. And I think in this instance, obviously, sometimes if it's just a bit of rain, we go, what, yellow rain? We don't need a warning. Or snow, you know, we know it's snowing. But I think when it comes to sort of wind, driving rain and gusts, you know, the weather warnings are pretty valuable in sort of advising us when it's safe maybe to drive on certain roads or what have you. Because as I said to Lee, there are going to be trees still vulnerable from the last storms that are still, you know, full of leaves that potentially could come down. And we just all want to get through the weekend safely, don't we? Now, just to remind you, if you want to watch today's show, you can watch it like you can every other show that we broadcast between 9 and 12 daily. You can go on to YouTube and watch it on your laptop, your smart TV or your Fire Stick. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland. You'll see we're streaming live there. We're across our Facebook pages and on the X platform as well. So no excuses. Or just sit back and enjoy listening to us in Radio Land. A yellow wind warning commences at noon tomorrow, which will turn orange at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. And on it goes. We are joined on the programme by Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather. Good morning, Alan. Thank you very much for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
All right, so this is our first named storm, I suppose, of the named storm season, if I could put it to you like that. What can we expect, Alan?
Yes, Amy is the first named storm. But before Amy today, we have a very wet day with some very heavy rainfall. It will be a little bit breezy today, but rainfall really is the issue today, especially on higher ground. You could see over 40 to 50 millimetres of rain, and obviously falling on ground that's already saturated, you have runoff and you may have some localised spot flooding. But then Storm Amy tomorrow will also bring more heavy rain on top of that, which is going to be a problem. But the wind really will pick up tomorrow afternoon. So that orange warning now comes into effect at 2 p.m. And really 3, 4, 5 p.m. you'll see winds really picking up in Donegal. You're looking at gusts up to 120, 130 kilometres an hour possibly, especially near the coast. There is actually a red marine warning, just for anybody that may be contemplating going at sea tomorrow. But you're looking at very strong gusts, Greg, really. And this time of the year, those gusts will have a bigger impact because you still have trees in full cover. So some power outages, etc. It will continue very windy through Friday and through Friday night and into Saturday. So Saturday will be another very windy day, and also some more rain, I'm afraid, for Donegal as well on Saturday. So significant enough 48 hours, well, even to 72 hours in terms of wind.
Yeah, and relatively mild with the storm tomorrow and then temperatures dipping. What's going on there?
Yes, yeah, so we have, so Storm Amy is actually the remnants of Hurricane Umberto, which kind of has been re-energised by the jet stream. But there's some tropical air moving up with that. So as you said, it's very mild this morning. But when that clears through, then we will see much cooler air following behind. So it will be a big change in air mass, and it will feel a good bit cooler once that goes through. But a lot of rain, obviously, in that warmer air mass, it's able to hold a lot more moisture. So a significant enough amount of rain to fall today before we have that rain tomorrow.
And I kind of was hinting at this a little earlier on. Obviously, you know, we hear a lot of coloured warnings about various different types of weather events, and people can have their views on that. But this is going to be a significant weather event to take note of.
Yeah, orange warnings are pretty rare, to be fair. Orange and red are rare. Yellow, I think I've mentioned before, I think we could get rid of them, to be honest with you. I think it only adds confusion. But we have an orange weather warning, and Storm Amy is going to be significant enough, especially in the northwest. The centre of the storm, Amy, is passing just to the northwest. I mean, we're lucky in some ways that the strongest winds will stay out in the Atlantic northwest, like looking at 170 kilometre an hour gusts out there. So we're lucky that we're missing the worst of that. But still, and especially, as I said, this time of the year, it is going to have a big enough impact. So charge those batteries up, Greg.
Yeah, indeed. I don't even want to think about being at home without electricity. All right, Alan, we'll keep up to date with you on your socials. Thanks very much indeed. That's Alan O'Reilly of Carlo Weather. You can check him out on Facebook, X and Instagram. Donegal County Council, they've got the severe weather assessment team monitoring their approaching weather pattern, and they say they'll continue to monitor all conditions as Storm Amy progresses. Donegal County Council, of course, can be contacted during normal business hours on 91539900, and in the event of an out-of-hours emergency, the council's road service housing department can be contacted on 0749172288. Obviously, for an emergency, call 999-0112. We'll post those details on our Facebook page, actually. Listen, you might not need them, but it's when you do need them that they're just not quite to hand, and then people can start panicking and what have you. So they're good numbers to have, and we'll get them stuck up on our social media. Just to remind you, 086 60 25 000 is our WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25 000. We appreciate the contacts we've had already this morning. In relation to the weather, Greg, it is bucketing the rain down this morning. Our school does not open its doors until 9 a.m. So this morning, the kids are standing there in the pouring rain. After a number of complaints, the school rang the bell early. Surely a bit of common sense would prevail, and kids should be allowed in out of the rain on mornings like this. I'm not sure of the ins and outs of that, or why that may or may not be the case. I do remember when the boys were in national school at the start time, you know, there was a time that you couldn't go in before. But anyway, if you've a view on that, let us know, 086 60 25,000. On the presidential election, Greg, we should be able, we should be glad for it to be boring. Politics used to be boring. It doesn't need to be a spectacle. Spectacles are usually bad. Yeah, okay, that is one approach to it. Another comment here. Snapchat stories, you're going to be charged effectively for storing your data. We're now going to be charged for Snapchat storage. I love getting my Snapchat memories every year. The best years of my life are captured on Snapchat. I couldn't think of what I would delete, but also don't have much extra money left over at the end of the month. Everything is becoming too commercial. We'll download your Snapchats and upload them to Google. You get plenty of space there, and you also get memories there as well. Right, Minister Neil Richmond is Minister of State for International Development and Diaspora. He joins me on the show now. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for your time. So as global headlines focus on conflict and climate pressures, Irish school children are engaging with the world around them. Tell me more, and I think I can hear their joyous tones in the background if my ears serve me well.
Absolutely. I'm literally ringing from a school in Dublin who are taking part this year in the Our World Awards. This is an amazing programme that the Irish government through Irish Aid run for third to sixth class students. And we had an amazing entry last year, a school, Mura from Glenties, who I think I spoke to you before,
yeah,
Greg, when they came up to Dublin and they got to the final. Absolutely amazing programme. So we've launched that. We put the call out to principals in every single national school across the country, asking them to take part in this. And as I said, I literally just stepped out of a classroom of joyous fifth class kids here who are loving learning about the world around them, about how what they're watching on the news, what they're seeing on the headlines, how it affects them on a daily basis, but crucially, how Ireland is playing such a massive role in the world through Irish Aid in some of the poorest regions in the world, making sure people can have some sort of the opportunities that, to be honest, we all take for granted.
And is their world, if the truth be told, you know, hopefully they'll be, you know, young adults probably long after I've packed this in. And it's their world. They're inheriting it from us. And sometimes I think we, you know, as we get older or we've got ingrained attitudes, we can be cynical or sceptical of certain things. And that comes in sort of, you know, different extremes, of course. But young people, you know, they're starting out, you know, their brains are sponges and they approach things differently, I've noticed anyway.
Absolutely. And any of the children that I've spoken to in the last couple of weeks, as we've got this on the road, or indeed who I spoke to last year who entered, it's amazing that they don't have the inbuilt prejudices that we have. Now, and I'm not talking about prejudice in the mean sense, but that level of perhaps cynicism or banked opinions. And they're so desperately keen to learn, well, what's it like for a 9-year-old in Sierra Leone? What's it like for an 11-year-old in Gaza? What's it like for an 8-year-old in Zimbabwe? All countries where the Irish government is working on their behalf with the money, the tax money that their parents and guardians and grandparents pay in, to make sure that they have the opportunities. And one, I find it absolutely gives people perhaps a greater appreciation for the amazing things that we take for granted, but it also gives them the opportunity to know about, well, how can I play my part in addressing the climate emergency on a local basis? How can I work for a more just society locally? And how can we break down a lot of the prejudices in the more nasty sense of it? Indeed, when it comes to things like xenophobia or racism, and how do we make sense of what we're seeing on our TV screens around the world, be it from the US or Gaza or Ukraine?
There seems to be a global movement at the moment, you know, towards, maybe you could call it conservatism, certainly nationalism. Do you believe that's a blip, if you know what I mean? Not a blip as such, it's more significant than that. But, you know, do you think there are generations coming through that will undo that to some extent and start thinking on a more sort of global in a global sense?
Yeah, I think that's a really deep question, Greg. And if we had 2 hours, I'd love to get into the depth over coffee, but we don't. But I do think it is, to an extent, cyclical. We are seeing a rise of conservative nationalism, not just in the Western world, but we see it in some of the more authoritarian powers around the world. That's sort of base level of nationalism from an economic policy as well as when it comes to social policy. But we have seen elements of this before, and we have seen it retract. And I think one statistic that I found really interesting is if we looked at, say, the Brexit vote in the United Kingdom, the proportion of people in the 18 to 24 category, nearly something like 80% of them voted Remain, which was at a stark contrast. So they're now living with the consequences. If we look at other countries, it's young people who are providing that conscience. And I remember when I was a young student, you know, I was out on protest marches against the war in Iraq, the Make Poverty History marches. There is always a cyclical movement. And so the politics in some countries where they're pulling back from the world, putting in tariffs, cutting their aid budgets, it is balanced by a very keen movement, say, particularly in a country like Ireland, who are standing up against this tide and saying, well, actually, no, we want to be part of the world. We want to speak up for the people of Gaza. We want to stand in solidarity with the people of Ukraine. We're not cutting our aid budgets. We want to continue to be a proactive leader, both at the UN, but also at the European Union. And I think there is that wave that what we may see at the moment, in terms of that sort of conservative nationalism, be it in the US or France or Great Britain, I do think that is cyclical and it will move on. But it requires people in the here and now to continue to use their voice, but also to engage the next generation, which through the Our World Awards, it's making sure we equip our young people and we work with our educators at a national school level to make sure they have all the resources possible to make those informed decisions about the world around them.
Yeah, and before we talk about sort of the the Our World Awards and invite for local schools here to take part, I think too that we will truly become a more harmonized sort of global entity if this sort of message of understanding, you know, respect is right across the globe, if that makes sense, if you know what I mean. Because I think sometimes the adults try and frame it that it's always, you know, the Western countries, in inverted commas, that are accommodating and understanding. And I'm not saying other countries aren't like that, don't get me wrong, but I think that's what people who are against the likes of immigration or the movement of people are tapping into, you know what I mean? That it's all about one sort of side of it's one culture trying to be accommodating and understanding. As I say, I think just when that conversation is had or when we work on that, I think we truly will have a sort of a better shared global existence.
No, absolutely. And look, I'm very fortunate in my current role and then in my previous life, I would have travelled the world a lot. And the more you travel the world, the more you visit other countries, you realise there's no superior culture. There's no one country that's the best country in the world. Everything's different. And as you appreciate those differences, it makes you take a more balanced opinion. And certainly the one message that we want to get across is life isn't binary, you know, and the more you have information, the less there is in terms of ignorance in the world, in terms of not necessarily in the crass way, but not having the knowledge of other cultures, the more into that vacuum flows, unfortunately, prejudices that we're not happy with.
So applications or invites are open now for the rworldawards.ie. As you mentioned, we had success in the Northwest, in the county, more specifically out of Glenties last year. Is this the work for maybe parents to flag it to schools or any teachers or principals listening to see what's in it for them and how, you know, they can use it, use the tools within this also for growth and learning for the children, not just to try and enter and win?
Well, it's not really about the winning, to be honest. It's about the taking part.
Over
500
well.
Schools nationally took part last year. And we're very keen. The application would usually be from the school itself, from a specific teacher or maybe a principal to run it, not necessarily throughout third to sixth class, but maybe one class from that group. But certainly, I know any of the schools that I've spoken with, the original idea maybe hasn't come from a teacher or principal, but from a parent or indeed from a school pupil who's seen some of the resources online or has heard about it in another school and said, I'd love for our school to take part in it. Now, it's completely complementary to the curriculum. It's not going to be an additional burden to teachers. And I know teachers are overstressed. I am literally married to a third class teacher, so I know that very, very well. But this is something that will enhance and enrich something that the schools are already doing. But particularly schools who have a desire to learn more about the world around them. It can be extremely creative with the entries. It can be something that's perhaps in music or dance or an artistic display. But all the resources are provided. And as I said, I would have written to all national school principals in the last 10 days asking them to consider taking part. We had over 500 entries last year. And as I mentioned, Scoilmurra in Glenties came to the final in Dublin, which will be held again next year in June.
All right. Thanks very much for your time. Take care of yourself. That's Minister Neil Richmond, Minister of State for International Development and Diaspora. Rworldawards.ie is the website if that's something you might be interested in. I've seen something about the Walsh Sisters and I didn't know what it was, but it seems to be a TV show. A caller says, I watched the Walsh Sisters on TV this week. It was awful. A bunch of girls drinking and waffling and smoking. Did anyone else watch it? If you want to educate young people on bad habits, you may let them watch this. I've never seen worse entertainment. I have no idea. But do you know, the funny thing is this is the way PR works. I kind of want to watch it now. To see what you're on about. So in a way, whilst you were disgusted in watching it, it's kind of made me want to see what it's all about. That's how it works. There's no such thing as bad publicity. Hi, Greg. When talking about the extreme depravity of the government of Israel, the words behave yourself and be sensitive are so far removed from reality, they're nearly insane. I'm not 100% sure what that's relating to, but I know it's relating to Israel, of course. Dentists, a few contacts. We get a few contacts every week with people struggling to get dental care. Greg, what's a person to do? This listener asks. I'm in pain since last week with a toothache and broken tooth. I attended the dentist yesterday, but nothing was done, only x-rays, and told to call back next week and then have to pay, although with a medical card. Can anyone help me as the pain is unbearable? It's hard to know because you've been to the dentist and they've said come back next week. Did you tell them as bad as it actually was? Call them back and say, look, I was in with you on Tuesday. I can't deal with this pain. You're gonna have to do something about it before next week. You know, sometimes you have to be politely stand up for yourself and say, look, I can't last till next week. My mouth's in agony. In terms of dentists, whether or not they take medical cards, that is completely up to them. They are businesses at the end of the day and it's their business model. So that's just unfortunately the way that is. We were talking extensively about tourism yesterday and a councillor had raised the question of, you know, Glenveagh National Park and it closing Monday and Fridays for tours of the castle. And it's one thing hearing it from the councillor. I thought it was very interesting then, and this is not in any way to say that Councillor O'Farrey didn't make the point well, but then listening to Ashley and Arnold of Arnold's Hotel, like really pointing out the fact that, no, this is a big deal. This is a big deal to the industry in this area, which I thought really was quite interesting. But anyway, on tourism, why does everything close so early in Donegal? Go to any other country and attractions are open till at least 9 or 10 p.m. I think this is where we lose so much of our tourism. What kind of places are you talking about there, just so I know? On the issue of mental health, the caller says, what's wrong with our HSC that does not open proper mental health hospitals? So many families living in fear of loved ones that are not responsible for what they do. And just one last one on Diffin. We had hundreds of comments over the course of the last couple of days. I bet the differers are a lot safer on the roads than the complainers who cannot stand anyone doing anything. That's their take. We're joined on the programme now by Councillor Micheál Colm McGillanaspa. Good morning to you, Micheál Colm. How are you getting on?
Imagine why, Mr. Greg. It's kind of a bit of a damp kind of morning here in beautiful West Donegal.
I know, isn't it? Just now it's all across the region, actually. But yeah, you're going to get a bad doom with the wind over the next couple of days. Right, anyway, you've been making a request for a meeting for a very long time about... Is it about a conversation about tourism in the Gaeltacht, in West Donegal generally? You frame it. What conversation do you think needs had?
Well, I think it's a very broad conversation that has to be had, not just the Gaeltacht and Seohocaigne, but right across the whole Northwest. But I'm going to specifically speak about my own community. Maybe for 7-8 years now, I've been trying to have a conversation with Corlach Hondaig and Ningal just around about tourism. And before everybody starts or anybody starts jumping down my throat on being keyboard warriors, I'm not against tourism. I have been very proactive around progressive projects, around tourism, around food, language, and our coastal community and island community. So it's not that I'm against. I've been involved in quite a lot of projects, especially the Blue Way project and the Blast project, which is the Gaeltacht and for the Hondaigin Ngal. But what I'm trying to get from the council is that we sit down and seriously look at tourism in terms of how tourism will impact on a local community. And bear in mind, a local community that is socially and economically deprived as it is. Because we see right across other Celtic nations, for argument, I was speaking to a very proactive community activist this morning who's very embedded in this argument, our discussion, and he was telling me and informing me quite a lot around Cornwall and Rathenburg, Wales, and all of Scotland. And we also see in other parts of Europe, in Catalonia and the Basque Country, we've seen last summer and even during this summer over in hotspots across Europe where the local communities were very clearly voicing their frustration, their concern and their anger of over-tourism. So over-tourism, what does that mean? So for us here in West Donegal, before we come to a tipping point, and for me, I don't think we're that far away from it. Airbnb has a massive impact on our Gaeltacht community, has a massive impact definitely in terms of people who are trying to find homes. Right now, I suppose I'm working with at least 5 or 6 mothers who are homeless at the moment. One mother in particular, without identifying anybody, with a number of children, had been living in a home, renting a home for a very long time, working away, and overnight that property then has become, well, not overnight, but over the proper period of time, but had been turned into Airbnb. We see property being bought here in parts of West Donegal that is way beyond our ability to buy for ourselves because of the low wage structure that we have here and the lack of good, steady employment. So on that basis, the language also and how that impacts on us, we as a council have an authority, but not our responsibility, but not just us as a council. We as a wider community must have a discussion around tourism. Yeah. So how will tourism benefit us?
Before we get on to that, so, you know, a lot of people then will come back with the argument that, you know, tourism is one of the main employers in this county. That, you know, tourism coming into the county spend and a rising tide lifts all boats and all that kind of stuff. I'm not sure if the other areas you mentioned, if they've sort of got alternative, you know, employment options or what have you. Like, you know, you mentioned Cornwall or the Basque region. You could talk about Lanzarote or Albufeira. All of these places, as you've quite rightly pointed out, are trying to strike a better balance with tourism and everyday life. I just wonder, would this require, though, greater investment or encouragement of different types of business? Because whilst, you know, in terms of the big bucks, tourism really only benefits a small amount of people if you look at it right on the face of it. There are an awful lot of people that are employed and then other businesses also that you wouldn't call tourism businesses, but that benefit from tourism.
Yeah, look. The sad reality of it is that the tourism only benefits a very small minority of people. And I'm not taking away anything from our hotels or nothing. I would work very, very closely with our hotel community as such and in the area very closely, actually. And I'm not taking away anything from that there. What I'm trying to do here is to create a broader discussion that we as a community have to have. Now, what value is tourism to us when rising tides doesn't raise all boats? Because that's the reality. It doesn't, because tourism in general employment is seasonal, it's low wage, and yes, tourism does help to put children through college for families who are struggling the way it is because of the failure of a proper economic model for us and West Donegal. Because if you look at our tourism, if you look at our industry, it's not what I think it could be. And clearly, obviously, with the latest Cotas Mackel and stuff, yet another beating from the Fianna Fáil, from the Gael government and European Union on in relation to fishing. So when we focused, and this is what I see, what has happened, I'm stuttering now, but what has happened since I went into the council is that there was a huge, massive focus on tourism. And there was a massive drive to get people into the West and Donegal, for instance, because that's the community I represent. But the infrastructure wasn't put in place. There was no provisions put in place in terms of camping overnight. There was no provisions
was
put in place
a whole
in terms
big,
of where were just, people going to stay?
Just in relation
so people
to
moved
that,
to Airbnb.
I know that, but in fairness, Councillor, you'd have been well aware, and this is just starting to balance it out. The council did a huge programme and incentivised people to develop camping facilities right across the county. There was a big public engagement and lots of them popped up. You don't remember that?
No, what I'm shaking my head is it's very fine to have engagement with a wider community, but when you're a social and economically poor community and you don't have the access to big money that it needs, building camping sites and the facility that is needed is not cheap. It takes a colossal amount of money and you need to have money to be able to invest in that there. And then there's very, very little people in West Donegal that has that kind of capital. So for me, it's having a discussion. And it's not a discussion that I want to see solely restricted to councillors. It has to be the broader community, all those who are heavily involved and committing quite a huge amount of their energy and time to the provision of our language, our environment. Those who are very passionate, like Chin Chan here, who are very passionate about language, but also very proactive around the housing and the lack of housing that we have. Mm. So if everybody is moving towards Airbnb, where is our children supposed to live? Where are people? I spoke to somebody this last month who's just after a torn home from unfortunately many years away in a foreign country due to the economic situation that was here, and he can't, and they can't collectively dispute them, but they can't find accommodation here now. And accommodation has moved, which it would have been roughly about 400 or 500 euros, even at that it was expensive, but it's moved now that it's nearly half to two-thirds of your weekly income.
Just in relation to that, though, and I know you're trying to keep the conversation broad, and quite rightly so, but just in relation to housing, you know, again, and we've had this conversation before, this is private property. And it is the state and the local authority, surely, that is responsible for providing housing for people, not to interfere with people's own assets, whether they're investments, whether they're inheritance, whether whatever it might be. Do you get where I'm coming from? People won't be happy if we're going after Airbnbs, people own private property, when it's the view that the state should be providing houses. The council should be turning council houses around quicker. Do you know what I mean?
I think the council have a big part to play in this here, and the very fact that we haven't been proactive due to government policy, and that's just the reality and the facts of it, due to the government's decision on looking after the private market interest, and that was about making rich people and richer. I'm not talking about somebody who had a house maybe willed to them because of an old auntie or an old uncle that unfortunately passed away. I'm talking about a policy that was developed and supported by those TDs who are in government to make sure that the private market was well looked after. And if you're saying that people wouldn't be happy in terms of the state involved looking at people's private property, I disagree with you. I think people want Airbnb regulated. I think people do want that there would be a price control. I hear on a regular basis that we should do a rent boycott. I hear on a very regular basis, what is the state doing? I can't find a home. So when I deal with people, like others deal on a daily basis, of people being homeless and our homeless shelters not being able to facilitate what the need is out there, not alone us not being able to get the houses that people need. There are people who are working, and it's irrelevant if you're working or not, but there are people who are working now. I'll, for one example, discussing with a father, a single father yesterday, who's in a shelter, unfortunately, who is many, many, many miles away from his support base and where he works and where his two children go to school. And we're forcing them to the other end of the county. So I do think that we need to look at the private market. I do think that we need to put a rent cap. And I do think we need to regulate Airbnb, because Airbnb is absolutely massively impacting our community. And what we're finding is that there's those well able to afford outside of the community who are buying up property here, who's never been here, who's buying portfolios and paying a heavy cost for it.
Well, the overwhelming majority of property purchased across the region last year, across the country, was by vulture funds. A workshop's been scheduled for the 11th of November at 9:30 a.m. In Unclahunlea PSC regarding the impact of tourism on housing. Is that an open public meeting?
No, it's not. No, it's not. And I've been asked this since I put it up on my Facebook. Is it an open public meeting? And again, for me, it needs to be. We need to be a part of that conversation. There are, like, in our more now, Felchirin are having a public consultation. We need to have public consultations, and we need to be listening to the voices of those who are working hand in hand. And I want to state very clearly, we have staff within Corlicombe Gunningall who realises and knows that we have to have sustainable tourism, as does others within Bord Feltenham and those that I interact with on a regular basis. But I don't think we got to that position. And to get to that position, I think we need to listen to the likes of Chinchan, to the community groups like Corhum and Fáil Brigidor, and many, many others who are very, very proactive in the community. Those who are dealing with people who are living in poverty, those who are dealing with people who are living in homeless shelters, who are actually homeless.
Are you considering at all hosting...
And that's not happening.
Are you considering then, at the very least, hosting a public meeting yourself before November 11th to invite those people in, so at least you can bring that information into this workshop?
Yeah, look, I fully agree with you, and maybe maybe I'm a bit complacent, or maybe that's something that I haven't thought right through properly. Because even today, as I was speaking to some people within Chinchan, I was saying, look, we need to take ownership of this. We don't need that, and we shouldn't have to wait for Corlicombe Gunningall or state bodies. We need to organise ourselves. We need to be calling the public meetings. We need to be the ones who are leading out in this. At the end of the day, as a public representative and as civil servants within senior management of Corlicombe Gunningall, we should be dictated to by those who were here to represent, who pays their wages, and especially for me, who votes for me every 5 years.
It's far better to speak
years.
To people than about them.
Excuse me?
It's far better to speak to people than about them.
Absolutely. It has to be from the ground up. We need to take samples, and we need to take lessons from the likes of Cornwall or our Celtic neighbours from Rathenburg, and even the Basque country of Catalonia and other countries across Europe that has seen and has taken progressive actions in relation to this. And clearly this is not about no to tourism. It's certainly not. I don't want to see a situation where we end up like we have seen right across Europe with the protest and chasing tourists. So we need to be well ahead of that game. We need to make sure that the likes of our hotels and the tourist industries that is sustainable, that is looked after, but our language must be protected.
Understood.
We're not a zoo. We're not here to be bounced into the area, to be viewed, oh, look, and they lovely little people who live in the Gaeltacht. We need to develop and progress our language. We need to make sure that we're protecting our language for our generations to come.
Listen, but
we need to
yep.
make sure that our community are able to live in the Gaeltacht and that they have yep. homes that they can afford, and we're not just putting more money into big landlords' pockets
okay.
who are
an
there
important,
for nothing but greed.
An important issue, that's why we gave you so much time. Thanks for your time. That public, sorry, it's not a public meeting, it's a workshop. 11th of November, 9:30 a.m. No point telling you where it is because you can't go. I'm not sure if it's even open to the media. I don't know. But anyway, there you go. That's what's that. And what's your views on that? I mean, like, I get what the councillor's saying. I do. I just feel we could have lots of people living in houses, and that's exactly what you want. But they also have to be able to sort of make a living, don't they? Now, this is not a case of getting rid of tourism, but there has to be some sort of alternative employment. Doesn't the more sustainable small to medium? I don't know. Anyway, there's people know far more than I, and I'm sure they'll make their views known at that workshop and on other platforms as well. Let me know what you think, though, to his comments. 086 60 25,000, and the comments more generally. Obviously, sometimes we can sort of judge what people are saying based on what we think of them or their politics, but just more generally, I think in terms of independence, opposition, government, I think we can all have an opinion on what is the way forward for our county and for its people. A caller says, Airbnb isn't the problem. It doesn't need regulation. Airbnb and holiday homes keep us local construction maintenance workers in work all year round in Dunfanaghy and other towns. Local people not being able to get planning on their own land and planning taking too long to obtain a bigger problem. We need more houses of every type, but we also have a particular market here in the Northwest that is skewed. It's skewed because of defective concrete. It's skewed because of a high rate of, you know, people here on international protection and getting €800 or €600, whatever it is, towards their rent. That's not in any way casting any shade, but there are particular pressures on the housing and rental market in this county, and not least the fact that it's very difficult to get planning in certain parts of this county, even on your own land. A caller says, I'm in sheltered accommodation because I can't get somewhere to rent inside a rent that I can pay. Everything's over €1,400 a month, folks. Can you believe that? It's just impossible, says a listener. Hap told me that I can't rent it because it's beyond my means, but I've no choice but to pay it and go without or continue to live in this hostel, which is frightening the life out of me and my son. I know it's a very personal matter. I'd love to have a conversation with you and just to get a better understanding. You know, things change and it's very difficult maybe to speak out, but things change or the penny really drops when you get to hear of a person's real lived experience, someone who's in a hostel with their child. They're scared. They want something more permanent, but they can't. It's too expensive. Happily, if they can't afford it, you know, like that's a real person's experience. And I would love to, if they wanted to, give them a platform to get their story out there to better create awareness of the reality. A caller says, there are, on my last count, 80 houses belonging to the council sitting empty. Why are these houses not sold off to someone on the housing list and allow a family to get a mortgage on them and fix them up as a forever home for them? I think the council don't want to get rid of any of their assets, but there are other ways they could be brought into use, but thanks for that. Another caller says, the housing crisis is not the responsibility of private homeowners. The big vulture funds will fritter away their tax issues while the wee person who rents out their house in summer to tourists will be penalised. You can't force people to rent year round. And of course now with the new laws that are coming into effect, if you do rent out your property, isn't it effectively for 6 years, unless obviously you need to sell it, move a family member in, or you know your tenants are disruptive, but it's like 6 years, that's going to put a lot of people, or is putting a lot of people, off the sort of private rental market as well as everything else. Right, very interested in your views on all of that. We're going to take a break now for the news and obituary notices, and we'll be back thereafter.